This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. Thank you so much to the Carsey Wolf Center for screening Polite Society and inviting me and Kashif to come and have a conversation. We'll be talking about the film and some of the context, and then at the end we're going to open it up to your questions, so think about what's on your mind. So we're going to get into talking about your work and also the importance of the film, but I thought we would start by just sharing our favorite scenes from the film.
Yeah.
So what's the most memorable for you?
I think the most memorable scene for me is the dance, like at the wedding, because I mean, I grew up watching Bollywood because my mom was fully obsessed with it. And so sort of just hearing that song and sort of seeing the wedding, it just sort of transports me back to like my childhood of you know, my mom forcing me to watch these movies with her and her sister, her and my sister. And so, but it's just a fun scene.
It's really good. The inner, like the cutting back and forth.
Yeah.
Works so beautifully with that scene. And I think probably some of you recognize that the song is from Dev Das.
Yeah.
Maradala, which is a really beautiful song and was, I think, just brilliantly woven into that.
Yeah.
To make the tension. That
and scene. Then the runner up for me would be the gym scene when her friend walks in with, it's just so funny.
It's really good. The comedy.
Yeah.
Timing is perfect. I think my favorite scene is the sister versus sister fight, which for me is sort of a turning point in the film, and really is when things start to get pushed.
Yeah.
Like literally, she's being pushed into the walls of the house, and there's kind of the first indication that there's things that we weren't expecting that are going to be happening in the film, and it kind of just starts to create that, and also just seeing, like, it, you know, if you have a sibling, you know that there's some real, real stuff in that.
Oh
scene.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I love the parents' reaction downstairs. So, as Tyler mentioned at the beginning, Nida Mansour, the director of this film, is a BAFTA and award-winning comedy writer whose influences include Jackie Chan. And This Is Spinal Tap, and many other things that you see kind of coming together in her work. The two best known things are This Is Lady Parts, which is a series on currently available streaming on Peacock, which I recommend everyone go and see. And then Polite Society, her first feature. I know she's on the board of the Pillars Artist Fellowship,
yeah.
And someone who you have spent a lot of time with. So, and you've mentioned that you mentioned to me earlier that you were actually at Sundance when this premiered at Sundance. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the journey toward making the film and how this one actually came together for her.
Yeah, it's, you know, so I got to spend a little bit of time with her. The Pillars Artist Fellowship is a fellowship that we started at my organization, and she's an advisor on the fellowship. And so last year, one of the sort of in-person sessions was in London, and so we got to spend a day with her, and she really just sort of like told the story about, you know, the story that had been sort of in her for a really long time, and it was actually fun kind of spending, she was like kind of in the, like the final editing stages of it when we were sort of together in London. And I think for me, what was really exciting, or what was really interesting when she was sort of talking about it, was there's something, and as you all saw, there's something so genre bending about this movie. And I think like when she described it, we were all just like, I don't even know what you're talking about, like what this is gonna be. And you know, just to sort of see how it all came together was really, really cool. And as I spent a little bit of time with her, you really sort of saw all her like sort of personal like influences that came out into this movie. So yeah, it was really fun to sort of be with the cast and be there at Sundance. It was like a really big deal for the movie to premiere there. There was a lot of excitement around it, and just really cool to be able to support it.
Yeah. So the story that it's telling about polite society. It's a society that is very layered. It's defined by patriarchy and class hierarchy, but it's also defined by sisterhood and the power for subversive action to undermine like facades of civility. So in the film, we move through many different overlapping social worlds. We're in the British school system, we're in elite social spaces, we're in the dating scene, we're in the streets of London, we're in the online video world, we're at the family dinner table and in their bedrooms, and we're, of course, the soirees and weddings of the 1%. The story is centered on Ria, who is a British Pakistani teenager and aspiring stunt woman. And in many ways, this film is a Muslim story, and yet religion doesn't really factor into the plot or the characters in a substantial way at the same time. So I think a lot about what we should make of Manzoor's navigation of these layers of social norms and all the expectations, and what her and her sister are experiencing when they're navigating these social pressures, reflecting on my own experiences, of course, you know, to be a doctor versus an artist, to be married and have babies versus prioritizing other things, always respecting your elders even when they're a little bit insane. So I'm wondering, from your perspective, how does this sort of messy experience of navigating society that's represented in the film feel universal, and maybe even ways that it feels specific to the immigrant Muslim experience?
Yeah, I mean, you said something really so true, which is what I love about this movie, is that, so it is, it's almost like a Muslim story in the way that it's like, if you know, you know, like, you know, it's like, it's not actually sort of, they don't really talk about that part of their identity. They don't sort of, you know, they're not explicitly sort of bringing that up, which I actually really love, because I think it's such a cool and fun story that doesn't sort of like rely on that sort of specific thing. It is telling like in so many ways, I think the story is very universal, even though it's specific. I think a lot about sort of like Rami Yusuf's show, Rami, which was, you know, and I remember the first time I saw it, I remember thinking, this is so specific. Like, I don't know how, he made I think the opening scene of the pilot episode is him in the mosque, like sort of doing the ablution before a prayer. And it's like such a specific sort of thing that like a lot of Muslims have sort of experienced. And I remember thinking, like, who's going to be able to relate to this except for sort of us? But it turns out that the specific is incredibly relatable, because I think what it does is sort of show how similar we actually all are. So even with this movie, it's a British Pakistani family that's sort of, you know, like all of these things, you know, in terms of the pressures to get married and sort of not pursue art and all of these things. While, yes, I think that, you know, as a Pakistani American growing up, I related to a lot of those themes. I really think that a lot of people can relate to those themes. They're not always specific to sort of just like one culture. And so that's what I really appreciate about sort of movies like this, is that you see people that look like you on screen, and you sort of hear and you see themes that you relate to. But there's something really special about watching a movie with a group of people, and, you know, from different cultures and different religions, and being like, oh, I like completely relate to that. And that's what I think was just so fun about the movie, is that it is incredible. Like, you know, like I watched this, I really asked my sister to watch it, because I feel like most Pakistani women, I was like, oh, Pakistani women are gonna like really, really relate to this movie, or really sort of be triggered by this movie in a lot of ways. And but it wasn't just Pakistani women. It was like, it was, you know, women of many different cultures. And so I think that's what's so special about sort of both the representation and sort of telling stories from your own personal sort of upbringing, because they're always so much more relatable than I think you ever think they're going to be. And so I just thought that was so cool about it.
Yeah, I think Nida Manzoor really like tells the stories from a very true place that's true to her, in terms of the kind of, I know I've seen interviews with her where she talks about her relationship to her sister being like one of the central things informing it, and from there it creates these sort of universal relatable truths.
Yeah, because the relationship between the two sisters is so fun and beautiful and
real, even though it's so over the top, it still feels.
It feels incredibly real, and it's really cool how it sort of it's also like sort of subverts. Like I just thought the whole thing was so interesting. Even just her like her anger at her sister not pursuing art or her sister wanting to get married. Like the anger at sort of these institutional behaviors that I think we sort of grow up with. Just sort of being like, well, yeah, like anything. People of many different cultures can relate to the idea that like your parents just like want you to get married and sort of want you to sort of have stability in whatever form that looks like, and sort of to and I think a lot of the art that we've seen is sort of an I think of something like Monsoon Wedding, which I absolutely love that movie, but sort of the acceptance of like a lot of those sort of norms. And what I loved about this movie was it was like such a rebellion against these things that you know, these cultural things that we just grew up with. So there's just so many beautiful themes all throughout the movie.
Yeah, lots of subversion.
Yeah.
So speaking of subversion, in an interview with Mansoor that I read, she talks about the significance of showing a South Asian family in the dinner scene eating pasta.
Yeah.
And she says, people will ask, why not curry? Shouldn't they be eating curry? And she says, no, in her films, they get to eat pasta.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, in our contemporary media landscape, you know, in a landscape that's a media scape that's defined by this cultural normalization of an anti-Muslim or anti-Arab or anti-South Asian bias in some respects, what do you consider to be different about this film's portrayal of these characters or this family's experience?
I mean, to that quote that you gave, I mean, that's how you know the movie was made by someone of the culture, because my favorite thing to eat growing up was my mom's lasagna. Like, you know, like it wasn't like her tikka masala. Like, I mean, it was great, but like I loved her lasagna very much. And so I think that what I love about that quote is because I do think that if, you know, like a white person made a movie like this, they probably would have made that choice, even if it was malicious or not. Like, they just would have probably made that choice, being like, oh yeah, they're going to be eating Pakistani food. And it's like, and so those are the little nuances that I think are so, you know, really fun and interesting about both this movie, but not just about this movie, about what happens when we're sort of empowered to create art about our own lives and our own culture, because it sort of really it really sort of tells these stories about us growing up in ways that I think that people don't often really realize. And so I think that to me is something that's so powerful about, you know, we talk a lot about representation and the importance of seeing ourselves on screen, et cetera, et cetera. And I think obviously that's all true, but I think what is, to me, what gets most exciting is sort of seeing the authenticity of like, of just sort of like the normalcy of growing up. And that's why that pasta quote was just so fun to me, because it did sort of just bring me back to like coming home and my mom just being like, I made lasagna. And so I do think that's really, really important. And I think that's what's so, we've seen, I think that we saw this shift over the last like 10 years around representation, particularly of Muslim communities or South Asian communities or Arab communities, because I think for so long, the art about us was not made by us. And so it was these, you know, you saw a lot of things that were like sort of more stereotypical. And I think being seen is not always just being sort of seeing someone that looks like you on screen. It's sort of the behaviors and like, you know, even like small things of like when you see the set design and like the house, like the, you know, like the design, like the decor in the house and things like that. These are really important things that sort of puts you in and makes you feel seen in a very different way that's not just about sort of, oh, the lead sort of looks like me. And so I thought that, I think it's those small nuances that make this movie really, really important and powerful, but in a fun and really light way. I think we often talk about representation in this really heavy way that like, oh my, we want to see ourselves, you know, seen on screen, et cetera. And I think what this movie did that was so fun was that it was just light and fun and joyful, and it made us laugh all while sort of like kind of subverting these norms of like what we think a quote unquote movie about Muslims should be or a movie about South Asians should be.
Definitely. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about just what you do at Pillars and then how film and media actually plays a role in your mission.
Well, so the Pillars Fund is an organization that I started with a few friends back in 2010. And at the time, the organization was really, it's a philanthropic nonprofit that supports Muslim civic leaders around the country doing a host of issues around mental health and civic engagement and public safety. And we were doing that work for a couple of years, sort of supporting like on the ground leaders who are running, who are Muslim-led nonprofits doing a whole host of things. And one of the epiphanies that we had sort of doing the work for a couple of years was that a lot of the sort of the things that we were fighting, a lot of the work that they were fighting, it was almost like the ocean that they were swimming in was poisoned in terms of the way that culture was sort of really sort of perpetuating these really harmful stereotypes about Muslims. And so we sort of had this realization that if the organization's goal is to sort of both empower Muslims and support Muslims, we can't ignore culture because, you know, nobody wakes up just hating Muslims. Like that's not sort of I don't think that's something that you just like wake up one day. Like these are like sort of, you know, learned behaviors that are often sort of seeded through culture and art. And, you know, there's a whole host of things in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s that were sort of so harmful around terrorists and all of these tropes. And so for us at Pillars, what I really became interested in was less around combating these things and saying like, you know, I think there was like this attitude or there was this sort of this need post 9/11 where it was like, we're not this and we're not this and we're not this because it was like we were being sort of defined. And I think that the art has this really beautiful opportunity to kind of not react to stereotypes that already exist, but kind of tell stories about ourselves, like, you know, regardless of whatever else people might be saying. And so for me, what we really started to think about was how do we empower and support the next generation of Muslim filmmakers making stories like this, not necessarily quote unquote Muslim stories, but just stories. And they could be horror, sci-fi, this. And so for us, we really started to think that if we were trying to build a world in which Muslims sort of could be free to practice and be the way that they wanted to be, it was impossible to do that work without really thinking about the ways that culture support, you know, sort of culture creates these narratives. And so for the last 5 years, we've been working with a host of people, including NIDA, to build a program that supports the next generation or emerging Muslim filmmakers to sort of do, you know, tell the stories that we want. Because our theory is that the more Muslims out there telling stories, the more authentic stories you're going to get like this. Like the more people are going to be able to like relate, you know, not just Muslims and people of South Asian, Arab, Black, but like just anyone can sort of watch these stories and really relate. So that's really been the focus of the work over the last couple of years, is kind of using culture as a way to kind of just reframe or kind of just tell our stories. We have this like saying at Pillars, which is, I think for a long time it was like, I think Muslims were operating from this like let us in framework, and like we've sort of come in the last 10 years and been like, this shifted to this like check us out. Like, you know, we always joke that like, you know, in order for, you know, like Muslims are doing really, really cool stuff, like, you know, for all across culture. And instead of kind of being asked to let in, we sort of threw our own party and being like, you should come check this out because there's like really cool stuff happening here. And so that's really been sort of the driving force of the work.
That's fantastic. Well, so I know that you were also part of, in addition to sort of doing that proactive work, like kind of ground up, one of the things that has sort of laid the ground for that was a study, some research project that you were collaborating on with the Ford Foundation and USC's Annenberg Inclusion Initiative, and led by the actor and activist Riz Ahmed. And this was there were two landmark studies done on film and on television that really studied the prevalence and portrayal of Muslim characters on the screen to better understand in the contemporary world, like a moment, like really what are we seeing when we see, what are we learning from these narratives that we're learning through in terms of Muslim representation. So one of the reports was missing and misaligned the reality of Muslims in popular global movies. And this drew findings based on a study conducted, this is for your benefit, not for his benefit. So it was led by USC and researchers at USC, and it looked at 200 of the top grossing movies released between 2017 and 2019 in the US, UK, New Zealand, and Australia. And I'm just gonna share with you some of the findings because I find them really, really notable. Prior to this work, Jack Shaheen is the scholar who had really kind of systematically looked at the representation of Arabs and Muslims in US film and media, TV and film. And so this is a really important update to see where we were at just up till 2019. So there are 1.8 billion Muslims in the world, and Islam is the fastest growing religion in the world. So have that as your context. So their findings included that 144 out of 8,965 speaking roles were Muslim characters. So just 144 of those were speaking roles. Characters that were Muslim were often limited to being depicted as perpetrators or victims of violence. 20% of Muslim characters die by the end of the film, and 2/3 of those were by violent means. More than 90% of the films studied had no Muslim characters whatsoever. Half of Muslim characters that were shown in films were set in the past, so excluding Muslim modern existence from the screen. And 90% of primary and secondary Muslim characters spoke no English or spoke with a heavy accent that rendered them as foreign. So I think these kinds of findings are actually they're significant, right? They're statistical, but they're very significant when you think about the impact on the real lives, the real lived experiences of people, of Muslims in these, in these countries who are sitting and watching these films and who are, you know, like us, just grew up with these films that we often love, but maybe portray, really violently, do a disservice to Muslim identity. So, you know, we have to consider the impact and the significance. And, you know, I think about, this film is very light and beautiful and brings a lot of joy and a lot of laughter, and we need that right now more than ever. So I'm really happy to bring it and celebrate it. But I do want to think about the context of our society right now, where Wadia Al-Fahoumi was a 6-year-old boy who was stabbed 26 times and killed because he was Muslim and Palestinian. And this was in Illinois. And this was back in October and in the context of the unfolding genocide in Gaza. So I think that this portrayal, as much as, you know, it's in one hand, like we can say, oh, it's just something that we're pointing to and critiquing and, you know, it's this academic conversation. But on the other hand, there are real, these narratives have real, very real impacts on people's lives. And I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about the study, how it came about, and how you think about what we're learning is actually impacting people's lives.
Yeah, I think there's so much to say there. I think that the study was something that, like, the backstory on the study, which is both kind of like, you know, it allowed us to kind of build the fellowship and sort of, you know, kind of create a lot of great work came out of it. But I'll tell you the story, the study was almost frustrating in that, like, I remember when we sort of commissioned it again with the Ford Foundation and Riz's production company Left Handed and USC. I remember, you know, like, I remember before the results even came out, we had started to like plan like what we were going to do because we knew what the results were going to be. Like, and I remember thinking like, oh, we, you know, yes, on one hand, it's really important to have the data to sort of back this up. But I was also thinking about how, you know, like no Muslim who sort of read that report was surprised by any of the findings. And there was a reason why it was called missing and maligned, because what we found was that it wasn't just that Muslim characters were sort of maligned. It was that they just weren't there. Like there was, they just weren't even a part of these films and television shows. And so I think that was the first thing. I remember just sort of feeling this frustration of like, well, we know what's going to come out of this. We know that the results are not going to be good. But it did sort of allow at least the foundational study to sort of be able to like prove to people that this is the case. And when I say people, I mean, you know, predominantly white audiences who needed to sort of see the data because they don't often sort of believe communities of color who are sort of telling them this and from just lived experience. And so I think that's the first thing. And so your second point in terms of the whole reason why my organization is even doing this work in the first place is because the idea, representation isn't just this thing that's like cute and fun to have on screen. It's really important because the dehumanization of, in this case specifically, Muslims has led to sort of like really, really harmful acts, like, you know, like the story that you told in Illinois, is that it's very easy to hate someone when you're sort of being, you've been sort of fed this thing over years that, you know, Muslims are violent, or they harbor all types of like, you know, terrible attitudes, which is, again, I think the other thing that the study really showed was there's like so many interesting things in that study just about how like no Muslims in animated film, sort of the real lack of Black Muslims. Like, you know, one thing we don't talk enough about is the fact that the majority of Muslims in this country are Black. And, you know, one thing I will always sort of reference that I think it's really important to reference is that Islam in America doesn't actually exist without Black communities. It's just, it literally does not. I think estimates say about 1/3 of enslaved Africans that were brought over here were Muslim. Some of the first mosques in this country were developed by Black folks. The civil rights movement was like really sort of deeply sort of influenced by Islam, and then which was sort of, you know, Marcus Garvey was influenced by Islam. So there's these like deep like history of Islam in this country. One of my really close friends has this really great quote, Dr. Hussein Rashid, that there has never been an America without Muslims, and that's absolutely true. And so I think part of these narratives that we talk about, like this notion that Muslims in this country are foreign, or they're Arab, or they're, you know, only Arab or only South Asian, or whatever it might be, I think is A, obviously it's just factually inaccurate, but B, what we really started to see it sort of in, particularly in a post 9/11 world, was like really perpetuating like very like like incredibly harmful behaviors. Because, you know, it's hard for me to sort of get upset with, like, you know, I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, and if you're just a kid from Ohio, just like a white kid from Ohio, and you just sort of live in your little bubble, and you just watch TV that's sort of perpetuating this idea that Muslims are kind of like really violent, and they, you know, don't believe in women's rights, and, you know, they're homophobic, and like all of these different things, and it's like you're you know, steadily fed this appetite of these things. It's hard not to harbor sort of like this anger if you don't really know, you know, if you don't really know better. And so to me, it's such an important thing to think about media and film and television as a way of sort of literally saving lives. And we're sort of seeing that today too with what's happening in Israel and Palestine, is that, you know, it's very easy to dehumanize people. It's incredibly easy to dehumanize and not sort of come from a place of feeling like, you know, they even sort of deserve like the most basic of humanity, like, you know, basic of humanity. And so for me, you know, this is something that you and I were talking about earlier, is that like, I think the narrative, like when you're talking about changing narrative and behaviors through culture, it can be a frustrating thing because that it's going to take generations to do that. Like there's this been this perpetual, like for many generations, this like harmful thing. It's like what we saw with the ways in which, you know, Black folks were represented in film and television for so long, as you know, there was, you know, it wasn't really until the last like 30 years where you really started to see cinema that was coming out and sort of like created by Black people, that was really sort of creating art that was like empowering and telling their own stories. And I just think I don't think it's just a fun thing to do. I think it's actually it like I said earlier, it literally saves lives by creating these by having this type of representation.
Yeah, thank you. One of the things that I know was an outcome of that that study and that research was this sort of idea that you were also building a blueprint, like you were talking about this change, the narrative change, and the time that it will take. And the blueprint, as I was reading it, I see it like it's incredible because it reaches into like every aspect of the industry, everything from reforming casting practices to creating pipeline programs to bring Muslim executives and creators into the industry, sourcing even Muslim vendors, changing the constitution of advisory boards to include Muslim perspectives and sort of bring people to the table. So I'm wondering what you've seen, like, so that was from 2022, that was just a couple years ago, but like, are you seeing a receptiveness at the level of big players in the industry to what you guys are putting out there?
Listen, I'm going to be really honest. I was, and then I think October really changed a lot of that, if I'm being really honest. I think that I think there was a receptiveness. I think you know, this is a broader conversation around sort of, you know, I think Hollywood, you know, my assessment of sort of what's happening right now is that if you look at sort of the quote unquote like diversity boom in Hollywood over the last, like, you know, let's say 5 to 7 years, and where we saw, like, you know, like the Crazy Rich Asians, and we saw sort of Issa Rae, Insecure, when you saw this, all which were obviously incredibly successful, I think one of the things that's been really frustrating is that you're seeing the sort of like retraction of that in the last like year. It's almost like these sort of film executives are like, well, we gave you all sort of an opportunity to sort of do this, and it was fun and it was cute, but like, we got to go back to like business as usual. So you're seeing a lot of these studios kind of like cut back on their sort of diversity programs, and sort of like, you know, making kind of public statements by saying, oh, I think we went too far, you know, and all of these things. And so, so I think, you know, I mean, Hollywood's a weird world. I think that it's like a lot of industries is that, like, you know, you really have to have those communities in positions of authority and power for your communities to actually like really have a real shot. And so, you know, I think that when the study came out and then the work, and, you know, we've had incredible champions like Rami Yusuf and Riz Ahmed and, you know, Sana Amanat, who did Miss Marvel, and, you know, and just a whole host of other people. So, you know, like, I do think that there was this initial sort of receptiveness, but I'd be lying to you if I didn't say it was a fight. It's like a constant fight. Because I think that you always have to kind of prove your humanity or prove that there's in value in what you're doing, which versus sort of like with white audiences, they never really have to do that. That's just sort of the default. And so, and then, you know, when you layer up on top of that sort of, you know, the current climate, you know, like there are prominent sort of Muslims who I've talked to in the last few months who've sort of, you know, have been advised not to say things and not to sort of, you know, cause too much of a, you know, stir. And I think we are sort of in this like very strange moment right now where you feel like the progress that you made is almost sort of, we're going backwards in a lot of ways, and you really feel like how not permanent that the progress that you were making was. Not that you thought that it was permanent, but you know, you thought it was maybe had a stronger foundation than it did. And I think what the recent events have shown is that it's, you know, it can and sort of has been sort of taken away. And that's a scary thing for sure.
I have time for one more question, Tyler. Okay. So, I know that you have been working on the Pillars Artist Fellowship, which gives opportunities, gives, you know, grants that don't have any stipulation of how they're used to artists, and also gives them lots of mentorship from your amazing advisory board. And so there is this sort of new generation of creators coming up through that program, and we've seen lots of examples, specifically like in the TV space, like, I mean, there's We Are Lady Parts, there's Rami, there's Mo, you know, there's these examples where it feels like we're at a turning point. And now you're kind of talking about also that in this really present moment that's not seeming like a very linear path forward.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you can just talk a little bit about the program that you have helped to build, and maybe how those of you who are thinking together about creating new kind of infrastructure for, you know, new pathways, new pipelines for people to come in and help shift the status quo. Like, where do you see that standing and going forward?
I mean, I think that, you know, some of the most inspiring things that I've seen that sort of come out, I mean, someone like Issa Rae, I think, is like such a brilliant example of like what I think you can really do. Like, she created this incredible series that, that was undeniable, that, you know, that HBO sort of picked up and sort of turned into Insecure, and she sort of has created her own production company and sort of, you know, doing a lot of this, you know, like trying to own the content that you're creating. And so I think for me, it's like when you're relying and you're depending on other people, like, I really do wonder if a show like Mo, like, I'm pretty sure it got renewed for a second season, if I read that correctly. I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure it did. I do wonder how that sort of, like, how, yeah, like, I thought Mo was actually, like, just such a phenomenal show, like, such a, like, to me, that just kind of was, like, the best of everything that we're talking about, and,
In part because you have, like, in this film, you have, like, flawed, you can have Muslim characters who, they don't have to be good or evil. They are just these flawed human beings who are screwing up all the time, and, you know, just, it feels like a different moment.
Totally, and also the inner, you know, I know the term, like, sort of, you know, the intersectionality sort of gets, like, overused a lot, but, like, that's what I think was so good about that show, is it was really sort of talking about the immigrant experience, the undocumented immigrant experience, and, you know, sort of, you know, Texas culture, and all of these sort of really cool things that were coming together. And so, you know, I think that the good news is that I think more Muslims today than ever before, I think, are going into the arts and going into Hollywood and really kind of creating really incredible art. I mean, I think the flip side of that is that it's harder to sort of get your shows seen. And so for me, it's like what the fellowship is really meant to do is kind of create sort of a camaraderie amongst people who can support each other. And you know, and if you go onto our website and look at the 10 fellows and the projects they were working on, I mean, they are just absolutely incredible. There's a great guy in there named Imran J. Khan, who did this movie called Mustache, which is just such a great movie. That was premiered at South by Southwest last year, and actually Riz Ahmed just announced that he's sort of an executive producer on it, so they're looking to get it sold. It's really about sort of creating this stuff, and it's not to be pessimistic. I think there's a lot more people creating things, but it's a matter of sort of breaking through, and I think part of that comes through sort of distribution. That's something that we don't talk about. We're so reliant on sort of these, like, old models of distribution, and I think that there's an opportunity today. You know, I think YouTube is actually, like, an incredibly powerful medium that people don't often talk enough about. So it's really kind of creating your own content in sort of meaningful ways, and then having a community around you to be able to support and uplift that.
Great. Well, thanks for doing that work.
And
I'm going to open it up to your questions. We can talk about the film. We can talk about anything related to this conversation. So,
hello. I think you're doing great work with the Pillars Fund. Obviously, you funded a lot of media that otherwise wouldn't have been able to be made. So my question is, out of all these pieces of media that are there in part because of you and your work, is there any that particularly struck home to you and had a personal impact on you? And if so, why? Thank you.
That's a great question. There's so many things that I've seen. You know, it's funny because I wish my colleague Arij Makati was here. She's the one who runs the fellowship, and she has the fun job of actually going through all of the submissions. Last year, I think we had over 600 people apply for the fellowship, with 10 people, you know, getting selected. This year, we tightened the sort of parameters, and we still had, I think, over 300 people apply. And she's actually going through the submissions at the moment to sort of select. We're about to take it to the committee to select the next 10 for the cohort. And I've seen some really, really incredible things that, we've just not sort of heard of. And there was I don't even know where to start. I'll start with one that I thought was just really touching because I don't see things like this. One of our fellows in the first cohort, her name was Aksa Altaf. She's, her name. She's going to be sort of like a big, future Hollywood director in like all the big ways. She did this really cool thing for Disney called American Eid. And it was just like this very sweet story about these two kids kind of going to school and trying to sort of, the awkwardness of celebrating Eid. But now I think it's like a little bit more recognized in a lot of public schools. But for us, it was like a weird day because it was like our biggest holiday. And then you just go to school and it's just like any other day. It's like our Christmas. And it's like going to school on Christmas and just being like, yeah, today's kind of a big deal, but we're just like hanging out. Like it's like a normal day. And then, for a lot of us who had immigrant parents, they were like, yeah, you're not missing school. So it's just this like really sweet story about these two sisters and sort of like, just that sort of struggle of going, and it's I think you can check it out on either on Disney Plus, and it's called American Eid. And I think what I really like, weirdly, I don't have kids myself, but I weirdly get very excited about like kids content, because you don't see that often in ways that feel like, I remember watching it and just being like, man, I if I had kids, like this would be so fun to be able to show them. And I got to watch it with my niece, who's now like kind of old enough to like appreciate it. And it was just really incredible and fun and like beautiful. It's like a 20-minute short. So that's just one thing that comes to mind. But honestly, like, oh my goodness, there's like an abundance of talent. There was one, man, I can't even remember what it's called, but it was like a short that I saw by one of the artists that submitted this year. And it's like this very sweet story about an old man who is like a widower, and he goes to this stand every day to get food, and he like meets someone there, and it's like just this like very sweet sort of like, it's not even a love story. It's just like two kind of older people who just kind of like, find each other in this sort of like, this like window of loneliness for them. And there's so much out there. And I think that's what excites me the most about the fellowship, is that it sort of gets to shine a light on like these like really incredible artists that I think one day will be, household names.
I do applaud also your efforts and the Pillars Fund. As a white non-Muslim screenwriter who also cares about representation, I wrote a project and I included an American Pakistani Muslim woman, and I struggle to find resources. Obviously, there's a dearth of film in Western American media for me to look at. I did the best I could, but I'm wondering what kind of resources and what you would recommend to allies who are out there who also care about some of these topics, and what you're bringing to the table with the Pillars Fund.
Yeah, thank you for that question. Actually, one fun thing you should check out is we launched this really cool database with Disney, I think 2 years ago, which was actually sort of meant to do exactly what you were saying. Is I think we, you know, from executives, I think we got a little tired of them being like, well, we would have hired a Muslim, but we didn't know any Muslims. And so like this database actually sort of is one that like artists, you know, everyone from sort of screenwriters to costume designers to whoever can go in and sort of like, you know, submit it. And then it's a public database that you can access so that like if you are sort of creating a movie, for example, in you are, it's going to be taking place in sort of a Muslim country and you're looking for sort of a costume designer that sort of has that sensibility, I think the database is a really good resource in that way. I think that's just like a sort of easy way for, and it was actually kind of created for the exact purpose of the question that you just asked. So that's one like sort of simple resource that I can think of. And I think I think the other ways too is just sort of like conversations that you have with like people, like, you know, like I think opening up your horizons and like having, being building communities. Like one of the examples that I give that's like so cool is like, I'm sure many of you know that show The Bear, which is just a phenomenal show. So if you really look at The Bear, Christopher Storer, who's the creator of that, he directed Hasan Minhaj's first Homecoming King, and then he either co-EP'd or directed a couple of episodes of Rami. And so what's really cool about that is if you watch The Bear, there's the character Ebro on the show. He's a Muslim character, which you wouldn't really kind of catch. Like you wouldn't, because that's, I think, what's really cool about that character is that if you know, you know, which is always kind of fun for me, is that, you know, he like makes a reference about how he doesn't eat pork or something like that. His name is Ibrahim. But I don't know if Christopher would have sort of had that character in that show had he not sort of worked with Rami and Hasan. And so also sort of just like being in community with people and sort of understanding and having those conversations. I think, you know, I do think sometimes right now we sort of live in a world where, particularly allies, and I do have empathy for allies because they you know, they really want to get it right, and they sometimes might be afraid to ask the questions that they want to ask and be like, you know. And I think that sort of surrounding yourself with community and sort of being able to ask like the quote unquote dumb questions that you may not know, like, I think that's important. And I would say that that's important for, you know, on this side of the table to be open-minded, to sort of also be able to answer those questions in a way that, you know, we know it's coming from a place of like, you just want to do right and want to, you know, and you may not know some of those nuances. So those are the few things that come to mind.
Thank you very much. I love the film Beyond All Belief. And my first response to it, I don't know how politically correct or any way this was, but my very first response was, this director leaves Quentin Tarantino in the dust. So we don't have the director here.
Yeah.
We have you, Kashif, and the Pillars just sounds like just the most extraordinary organization, and I know that you are involved in many other kinds of foundations and organizations. But I hope you don't mind this question, but how did you get from Cincinnati to everything that you're doing now?
Your guess is as good as mine. I have no idea how I ended up here. No, I don't mind that question because I often ask myself that same question. How the hell am I here? I was just a kid from Cincinnati. You know, it's interesting. I mean, a lot of it was sort of like a series of sort of fortuitous, meeting. I was always, so I'll start with just the fact that like, culture and pop culture was just like a very important thing to me growing up. Like, I always make this joke that like I didn't know what prom was until I saw it in an episode of Full House. Like that's how I like figured out what prom was. I didn't actually know what it was. We didn't grow up with a lot of these things. And so my sister and I always joke, my I don't know how much my parents love this joke, about how TV raised us. But it's kind of true in that, like, you know, we really sort of understood American culture through film and television. So the foundation was always there in terms of just, I understood its importance from the beginning. In terms of how this sort of all happened, you know, Pillars was an organization. I would have never guessed in a million years that the organization turned into what it turned into. I think that, like, you know, I'm 40, and so for me, I'm of that generation where, like, I was 18 when 9/11 happened, and it had a profound impact on me, because pre-9/11, I mean, I was a pretty, you know, I didn't really kind of, I grew up in like a nice suburb of Cincinnati, Ohio. I kind of was like, I didn't really experience like sort of explicit racism in the way that I think a lot of people do. I didn't sort of, I had a relatively, you know, nice upbringing in Cincinnati, and even though I was sort of in an all-white school and all those things. And so I think 9/11 for my generation actually like changed the trajectory. Like, I don't know if I would be doing this right now if it weren't for that. And so for me, it was, I think that it was, you know, just this obsession of understanding, of trying to get closer and understanding my own, you know, I always joke that Pillars was just like this very selfish pursuit of trying to figure out who I was. And in somehow I sort of was able to like turn it into this organization that's doing like all this like really fun and cool work. But I'm grateful every day and of just sort of meeting the people that I met along the way and sort of, you know, being, having really great friends and mentors and allies who, who've always sort of been there. And then, you know, yeah, you know, you just sort of like, you just keep stepping through like, you know, certain doors, and then all of a sudden you like find yourself in like this, like, at, you know, at Sundance at the premiere of Polite Society and just being like, how am I don't understand how I'm here. But I'm very grateful. And I think that there's so few people doing the work that we're doing. And so, you know, the other answer would be that, like, I saw white space, you know, 10 years ago. I was like, oh, there aren't really a lot of institutions doing this work. There aren't really a lot of institutions that are kind of talking about representation from a Muslim lens. And so, so we just happened to kind of, you know, build something and yeah, here we are.
Well, thank you all so much for joining me. Can we give another round of applause?
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.